This episode is brought to you by Outdoor Class. Outdoor Class is an online video platform geared towards making you a better hunter. Watch instructional videos taught by hunting experts like Remy Warren, Randy Newberg, and Corey Jacobson. After the hunt, learn how to prepare your harvest from world-class wild game chefs like Hank Shaw and Jamie Tagan. Whether it's your first year hunting or you grew up doing it, Outdoor Class will take your skills up a notch. Use code EMPIRE20 at checkout to save 20% off. Visit OutdoorClass.com to learn more.
And what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the O2 Podcast. Tonight, Paul and I are here. Paul, you're there, and I'm here. And we're going to do a quick intro.
Virtually.
To bring everybody up to speed on what's going on around the state and news from around our world.
First day deer gun, man. This beautiful state that we live in. I was out on a hunt. Let's see, 4.9 miles today. Pretty minor day in the deer woods, if I do say so myself. So.
That's minor in your world. For some of us, you know, a couple hundred yards, hang up in the tree, and then be done with it.
Yeah. At least I went bow hunting, right? Ooh, we'll get into that one. Foreshadow. So what you up to, man? We spent days together, and now I haven't seen you in 5 days. I didn't talk to you today until 6 o'clock this evening, which is unheard of.
It was weird. Usually there's a lot of times I talk to you more than I talk to my wife. Not by choice. It's just the way it happens. But the
good cover up. Good for you. Way to backtrack months.
Well, let's see. We've had an eventful week, and let's just go back to last Wednesday, Paul. And my big news was I got that monkey off my back. So if you
off the back,
if you didn't see the post on the socials, I was finally able to connect with a buck, and everything worked out well. I've had my ups and downs. We've talked about that. I'm trying to get past all that. It's not, like I said, not, a lot of it I'm not proud of, but it's reality. And this one was meant to be. So it all played out really well.
He's a good deer too.
He was a solid deer. You know, it's like should have been a 6 point. He was a fighter though. He had one broken tine off and a nice scar on the top of his skull, but like good deer, and I'm 100% happy with it. It all just played out really well. And so got that done, and that monkey is done, man. We
didn't talk about this when I came over to your house. You said the only thing that you told me, you're like, I have a lot of stuff I want to talk about. And then we never did. So you shoot this deer, you put a really nice shot on him. You see him run off. You see him kind of wobble. You didn't call me until after you had laid hands on him. So as you're walking up to this deer, like, did you see his butt? Did you see his belly? What did you see first?
So the reason I didn't call you, and I was excited, it was 7:55 in the morning. I knew you were up, but that morning was cooler. And it was one of those days like I've had in the past where it doesn't feel like it's going to work because I don't remember. I was sweating when I was getting up there. I know when I was getting into the stand, there was a buck underneath me. And I mean, well,
which before. You sent me a picture, and we need to put this on Go Wild or Instagram, if we have to. But it was you climbing you're in the tree, you can see your bow like halfway up the tree. Your trail camera goes off, you can see you in the tree, and you can see this buck in between the trail camera and you. Yep. Hilarious, absolutely. Like, you can see your backpack or whatever it is, like 5 feet off the ground, dangling.
Yeah,
so it's pretty good.
That first one, you know, that was one of those. I'm like, okay, I'm not even in the tree. I'm not even set. Never got deer under me, which is a good sign, a good thing. And again, this is late in the season, so like I've talked to you before, I always feel like I see more buck movement in the later part of November than the early part. So this was right in line with that. But he walked in, got him to stop there, put the shot on. He jumped off slowly. I knew the shot was good. I did have another Luminoc, or not, I guess this one's a Nocturnal. I'll just call it what it is. Failure. I swear I have the worst luck with those.
Like, it was just gone.
Yeah.
Top of it ripped right off.
Yeah. But I knew where it hit was, it should have been good. Right. But I've been through this before and I didn't want to get too excited. I didn't want to tell anybody. I told my wife, I was just like, fingers crossed. Arrow was covered in blood. Like everything was good, but I've seen this picture before. So before I went after to really look for him, I kind of stuck my head out in the field and I looked. I didn't see him laying there like I wanted to, but I was like, nope, we're just going to back out for a second, go in, get some coffee, regroup, and head out. So as I was going, I had my single bevel set up on there with the bleeders, what the arrow weight, 550-ish pass-through, complete pass-through. Through the upper shoulder area, but there is no blood right off the bat. And that's not uncommon. It's pretty normal, actually, a lot of times, but a lot of times you don't find the deer very far away. They're close. So I started walking in the general direction where he went, and I knew he went out into an ag field that was, you know, there's no crops. The beans are out, very clean. And I was just hoping, like, where's this lump laying there? And I'm walking down the edge of this fence row. Paul, I was like, nothing. I mean, I didn't have any blood. There was no blood to track.
Were you panicked at that point?
I was in a weird place mentally, to be honest with you, because it had happened. It's happened before. And I didn't want to, I was trying to keep my emotions in check, like both highs, lows, everything. Like, just, we're going to do this justice. And if I've got to search hell and high water through hell and high water, like that's what's going to be. Right. But as I was walking down this fence row, and I kept looking in the brush, like, is there anything in there? Looking on the ground for blood, nothing. I don't know. I was probably 30 yards away from where I shot him. I look up and there is a large lump in the fence row, and it was a massive relief. I still, though, even at that point, was like,
he's gonna get up and run.
Yes, right. So I was very careful. Not far after that, I did start seeing blood just on the dirt, and it picked up. It was good blood and all that kind of stuff. So I approached it very slowly, and it was not until after I got up there, did the poke check. I had to stop and like take it all in for a second just to, you know, this journey has been ongoing for a long time. And for me, picking up, getting my first bow in like 2008 or 2009, I can't remember exactly. And Paul, I had one time a decent buck come in, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, that I screwed up. I didn't know what to do because I just hadn't had opportunities like that. So I could probably count on one hand how many buck opportunities I've had. And a lot of it's because of the land that I'd been set up on. It was small, private parcels, limited. And the other thing is not knowing, right? So I bet for the first 7 or 8 years, I didn't really pay attention to the wind. I did all the scent check or all the scent control stuff that I could do, but I didn't really pay, like, that's basic now. That's like the first thing I think of, but I didn't know. And there was a lot of just learning along the way. So when you culminate all that, almost, you know, 15 years worth of experience and learning and reading and listening to podcasts and watching shows and all the stuff. And I think hunting's come a long way because, it, you know, back in the day, it used to just be, you know, you watch the shows and the people go out and sit in their stands and like a dog on a leash, out comes this big buck. But like, things are, I've learned a lot. Okay. So for me, this is another like step up the ladder to you've finally kind of figured this out. Expert? Absolutely not. But you made a step in the right direction. And I had to take that in, and it was very, it was a very rewarding moment. And I was, it meant a lot, man. It was cool. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, congratulations again, man. I was thrilled for you on Wednesday when you called me, because you called, I didn't answer. I was doing dishes. And then you texted, and then you sent a trail cam pic. And I was like, oh my God. And I called you and I'm like, Luther?
The Luther. And, he's down.
And when you were like, yeah, yeah, I was like, did you find it? And you're like, yes. I'm like, I'm on my way. And my wife's like, what the hell, man? You were like cooking for Thanksgiving and all this. Is that one of them right there? Oh, it's a shed. Never mind.
I'm scratching.
That's a hunting douche move if I've ever seen one.
So that's all
right. But no, you worked hard for it, man. I am just super happy for you. And I know that our listeners are probably happy. I would I'm sure they've been rooting for you. Johnny Schwartz emailed me or messaged me on Instagram. It's like, it's your turn now. I'm like, oh, come on, man. I'm ready to go. And you know, Johnny and I had a nice conversation about pressure and self-inflicted pressure that, you know, we all feel. You can speak to that. And you just did. What a weight, man. What a weight that was getting off your back. So
yeah, feels good. And it is, it's your turn now. And, you know, while we're at it, it's amazing. We're going to give a quick shout out to our folks at Go Wild.
Yeah.
Paul, do you want to give the quick rundown of Go Wild is?
So we've talked about them on the show every week, man. And, you know, they are the pre-show social community focus on all that is good about the hunting, fishing, and outdoor community. And I mean, a lot of that revolves around knowledge. It revolves around people like Mike Larson, Derek Tells, sharing information and experiences that they've learned, you and everything that you've gone through, and being honest about that. That's the best part about Go Wild, man. And it's just the people that you meet. It's the community that is built around hunters, anglers, gun enthusiasts, outdoor enthusiasts. It's just a beautiful thing to be a part of, man. And if we want to dive in real quick, we'll get in a little more in depth, but just the differences between Instagram and Go Wild, Facebook and Go Wild, and just the arguing and the hate that people have on the apps. It's amazing.
Yeah, and I'm no saint, Paul, but like the one thing that I don't know, man, if it's kids, it's getting towards the holiday season, you know, you got to let a lot of that hate go. And I'm not going to lie, I got a little bit of hate off of this buck that I got. And I'm not going to get into that, but like we have a post that's on Instagram right now that's, I mean, it was when you and I were on the Vance's show.
Yeah.
In our world, it's gone viral, right? Like it's gotten way more likes and comments and stuff. There's a couple dudes on there. It sounds like they're about to meet in the parking lot to fist fight over something I said about bow hunting, whether it was easy or hard or not, and this and challenges. Like, that's totally not worth it. And the beauty is I put that picture on Go Wild, and damn it, I'm proud of that deer. And there's a lot of people out there that give you an attaboy or congratulations. And that's just nice, right? To hell with all this hate and judgment out there. Like, be happy for people. Don't know people's stories. And I'm on a little bit of a soapbox, but that's part of the beauty of Go Wild is that this platform that they've built, and it's got all kinds of stuff, right? You can shop, and they've got great selection of different products on there, but the people and the community is what it's all about. And so shout out to those guys. We thank you for your support of our show and everything you're doing for everybody in the hunting community.
And we're not bad mouthing Instagram to the point where we're saying don't use it. I mean, we use it every freaking day, and we're always going to use it. Those platforms have connected the world on a level that none of us saw. But man, if you read the comments on those, it just gets nasty. And quite frankly, I'm tired of it. So yeah. So time to go wild.com, Android, Apple, download it, sign up, you get free $10 on the community or on the shop there. So thanks to our folks at Midwest Gunworks, Ohio Outdoors 5. Andrew will save you 5% on any order. They've got a gun exchange. Their gun parts, like I talked about, if you're a tinker, gunsmith, a gun builder, firearms builder, thousands of parts you can put in your make, model, drill down, see the exploded views of these parts. Really neat. They got a law enforcement section on there, which is pretty cool. Tons of optics. So check them out. MidwestGunworks.com. Ammunition, freaking guns, everything.
Yeah. And the
Ohio Outdoors 5. Put that code in, save 5% on your order.
I don't know about you, Paul, but like for me, every year I go out on a gun season, it's like something breaks. There's something I see that other people have that I'm like, that would be really sweet to have.
yeah.
Maybe.
Gun envy.
Yeah. Maybe it's just like, this isn't the caliber for me. Whatever it is, now's the time to like take notes of all that stuff so that when you're getting ready for gun season, whether or ducks, it could be ducks, it doesn't have to be deer, but like turkeys, anything like that, these guys got you covered. So thank you to Tethered Nation, tetherednation.com, or tetherednation.com is their website. These guys are great. I'm a huge fan of the saddle. We aren't going to discuss it today. I used mine up in Michigan. I think I saw more deer or a lot of deer. And I think that elevation and the mobility of it, the ease, comfort, everything just helps with that.
I'm hunting out of it tomorrow on my gun hunt tomorrow. I didn't bring it today, and I regretted it from the moment the sun came up. I'm like, damn, I should have brought that set. I'm bringing it tomorrow. I've got a nice little bucky looking spot picked out. So,
and
yeah,
this is, I had somebody the other day ask me like, hey, what do I need or what should I have in a saddle setup? If you guys got questions, reach out and I'll give you my 2 cents on, you know, what you actually need and what will help make your sits better. Little things I've picked up over the years, but definitely big fans of the tethered systems.
So, you know, one thing that is funny, I've gotten probably 20 to 25 people have reached out to me that are of, how do I say this, the plus size specimens like myself, that have asked what it's like being a big dude in a saddle and what size to get and how, you know, comfort. A plus. So, and also thanks to First Light. I had too many layers of First Light on today. Months I walked those 4.9 miles and was like, oh God, I was sweating so bad. The arms on my Catalyst jacket were wet.
Well, it's wicking, so Paul. It's wicking.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, that thing dried really fast. I was comfortable. I will say that, but I freaking love those sleeves. They're like tapered, but not like in an annoying way. So it's hard to explain. But firstlight.com,
and
check them out. They got some cool stuff
for all of our sponsors. You guys, Christmas is around the corner. Or whatever holiday you celebrate, if it's gift giving time, all of them have gift cards, gift certificates, codes. So maybe that's something that you put on your list for this year. So let's see, Paul, where are we at? I lost my list of
news, man.
News from around the state. Okay. So this first one, the state is intensifying their efforts to control bush honeysuckle and the tree of heaven. And you and I had an interesting conversation about this going up to the UP, but this is a damn challenging topic to cover, right? But it's very important. So if you're not familiar, there are many invasive species, and they can be bugs and they can be, you know, mammals, they can be plants. I think plants are one of them. Perhaps we have the most ability to manipulate. They also have this uncanny ability to just adapt. And the one here that they're talking about, bush honeysuckle, and there's a couple different forms, but the one is like Lanicera macchii. That's the botanical name, Paul, for you.
Settle down, nerd.
Getting a little excited. Look, I actually, I've got.
Oh, here comes a book.
My manual of woody landscape plants. So, yes.
I'm looking for my natures and properties of soils. A book got to be in here somewhere.
I bet I got it. the plant dork in me, but that's Amur honeysuckle. Yeah. It comes from like the Siberia region. So like when you and I were driving up to Michigan, we passed a lot of shrubs on the side of the road, just brush and stuff. It's still green, man. It still leaves. It's
green, like midsummer green.
Yeah, it's like 25 degrees outside and snow on the ground. But that plant has the ability to leaf out early and hold its leaves late. And what it does is it ends up choking out your understory and some of the things that are really important to wildlife, the spring ephemerals, some of your native trees that need that sunlight to get going. It's just completely choked out by something that can hold its leaves for 10 or 11 months of the year, seemingly. Yeah. So this is an important topic, and I think there's no, if it was an easy topic, we would have already figured it out, right? But when you're talking about these plants, I think they talk about the Tree of Heaven. It produces 300,000 wind dispersed seeds.
Yeah.
That's a lot of offspring, man. And like
autumn olive, same thing.
Yeah. To try and to control that, it's very difficult. So if you're a landowner and you've got the ability to educate yourself and to pick up on what some of these invasives are, controlling those yourselves will be really important. Yeah. And will help your property. But know that the state is also working to do that. And there's other plants and how they got here and stuff is a huge topic. But like they're trying to do their best to take some of these out. And if you can do it at home, that'll also help. It's not going to be something, it's going to be a problem forever, I think, at this point.
No. But I mean, here's the thing about like state, you know, your comment, the state is also doing things. So if you look at like public land in Ohio, this is municipal. This is state, this is federal. Less than 5% of the land in the state of Ohio is public property. So that means less than 5% of land can be managed by a government agency or, you know, a government organization. 95% of this land is privately owned. So, I mean, the responsibility of landowners to manage habitat effectively and wisely, that's a big responsibility. And I mean, quite frankly, it's something that I don't think a lot of people really understand. And that falls on people like me that work for conservation organizations where we talk about the things necessary to manage. And, you know, it's just like take the decline in turkey population, right? People are like, well, what's the state doing? And the state's like, well, we have power to control 5% of the habitat in the state. 5% we can manipulate or improve. The rest of it is on private landowners. And I will say there's a ton of resources available, financial resources available to landowners. Dude, if you're a landowner and you have questions about maintaining habitat, freaking call me, man. I can get you in contact with the people with National Wild Turkey Federation to get you on the way. So that's what we're here for. That's the cool thing. There's so many freaking programs. The USDA or the the Forest Service. I don't know. I've done a couple events with them. Nick, the guy, he listens to our show, he's gonna be mad. But there's a ton of money, there's a ton of resources available to private landowners. So take it serious. If you need guidance, I can be your first stop and I will point you in the right direction. So,
and it's always funny to me. I can picture exactly where it is in Upper Arlington. One of the largest honeysuckle trees I've ever seen as this big, beautiful landscape specimen. And it's just that these people have, and you know, they don't probably give two shits about hunting or the outdoors. They care about the golf course behind them, whatever. But that is a huge problem. And that single plant that disperses hundreds of thousands of seeds, it's like,
it's a big deal. And it's one of those things, it's not a sexy topic. And so people are like, meh, bush honeysuckle, autumn olive, Tree of Heaven, meh. Right. But I mean, they do impact. I mean, and you know, you meh that for 3-4 generations, you really have an issue. And that's kind of what we're approaching right now. So,
no. All right, so everybody's favorite topic, CWD testing. We're going to give you a quick update here on where this is at. This is from ODNR. So they've confirmed that of 637 deer that have been tested this fall, and that's through hunting and through roadkill in the DSA, so Hardin, Marion, Wyandotte counties, they've had 3 deer test positive. The three that were tested positive were both via hunter. Okay, so they were harvested during the October 8th to 10th gun season. That brings the total to about four, or not about, it is 14 positive cases in the DSA since 2020 when they started testing. Just a reminder, if you're in the DSA this week hunting, you're required to submit your deer for harvest or for testing during gun week, and then you can also voluntarily test it through February 5th at the end of the archery season. Testing locations are available at ohiodnr.gov. It's one of the slashes. We'll call it the forward slash.
It's the forward slash, bro. CWD, okay. /CWD. It's always forward slash.
Dyslexic, Paul. Depends what you're... It's perspective, right? It's forward if you're looking that way, but if you draw it
what
that
do you
way,
mean perspective if you're looking in the mirror and it's backwards? Forward slash. CWD.
Shoot.
That's right. What else? Oh, theo2podcast.com. Andrew, we have some merchandise available for sale. We've got a couple people buying some stuff. Thank you for that. If you bought one of the guys bought a hat and a hoodie and some other stuff, we got some funny t-shirt designs that we're working on. But yeah, you can check that out. There's some cool stuff. What else we got? Follow us on the.o2.podcast on Instagram. Follow us on Go Wild O2 Podcast. Follow me if you feel it's necessary. Paul Campbell 322, and leave us a review. We haven't had a review in a couple of weeks. I'm getting lonely, Andrew.
Yeah, and Paul, let's
see a review.
Let's go ahead and cover this right now. You know, last week's podcast was very Buckeye oriented. It did not pan out well for the Buckeyes, and as much as I despise that state up north, I have to tip my hat because that team outplayed us. And I've coached us. So
I was there at the game. I blacked out the last 6 minutes. I'm like, you know what? No, I'm not even going to.
You didn't miss anything. But congratulations to them. And we'll do it again next year. How about that? So with a different twist at the end. How about that? Hopefully.
What if we just backdoored into the playoffs and got to play them again? Oh, God, I don't want to play those guys again this year.
I don't know if I want to play anybody.
Ass.
So
I can't take two ass whippings in 1 year.
So let's see. This week's show, we're going to take you guys a little bit. We recorded this one a few weeks ago, but a few weeks.
This is like in August.
Yeah, it's been a bit. So we sat down with the guys from Serious Archery. So Connor and Seth, and they've got a really cool thing going over there. Not just the arrows that we are fans of and have had very good success with, very strong,
Strong like bull,
man. I had one.
They got their carbon. They got their Sirius TV on carbon TV.
Yeah, they're doing all kinds of stuff. They got a podcast going too. Mm-hmm. But
podcast is strong.
They had just gotten back from a trip over in Africa. So take your whitetail hat off and put on your exotic animal hat. But
we talk a lot of whitetail too.
We do
talk whitetail. We talk some turkey. A lot of Africa. It was just cool, man. It was a cool talk. Just fun to listen to. So.
Preseason, great guys. Absolutely salt of the earth guys. And really, really cool to hear about the adventures. I think Seth has shot just about every animal under the sun with a bow and arrow. So it's very cool experiences that they have to share. So I hope you guys enjoy this. We're coming up here. What are we going to be? Next week, we'll be into December and getting closer to...
I've got December 10th. I've got, so what is that? Not this upcoming Saturday, the following Saturday. I've got another controlled hunt that I'm doing at Killbuck Marsh. That'll be fun.
There you go. We got to get you. It's your turn, buddy. Wait, it's your turn.
I'm trying not to put pressure on myself. I put enough pressure on myself in turkey season. I am freaking miserable, dude. If I don't see a turkey die, miserable, just grouchy, just angry, hate the world. I start hearing turkeys gobbling in my sleep. Neighbor's dog barks. I'm like, turkey.
Start picking fights on Instagram. I know it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I cannot put that kind of pressure on myself for deer season. I have to not give a shit about something. And unfortunately, deer hunting is that. Because I would lose my mind if I had 10 months of mediocre hunting. I'll just take 30 days of spring hunting.
Yeah, we'll get out there and enjoy it, man. And
Yeah, man. I've been having a lot of fun. This hunt that I'm on now is freaking wild, man. This place is cool. A lot of good deer. I think I told you today, I saw like the biggest deer I've seen. I've seen some big deer. I mean, we got to see moose, Dustin Huff's deer, up close and personal. Big deer, but like as far as like deer that I've seen someone kill, man, I saw a freaking toad come off this place today. So
I hope
screw that guy. Yeah. Damn Vermonters. You Vermonters are listening to this podcast trying to find out where all the big bucks are. Well, they're in Vermont.
Funny. So
I'm just kidding. Good people. Good people.
All right, guys. Well, we appreciate you. Hope you'll enjoy this week, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
See ya.
Take care.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the O2 Podcast. Tonight, we have, one returning guest and one new guest from our friends down at Serious Archery. Gentlemen, we've got Seth Poston and Connor Akers. How are you guys doing today?
Great, great. How are you doing?
Tonight is deer archery season eve. So we're getting close, right? It's like the kid waiting for Christmas, and you're almost there.
We've been in for several weeks in Kentucky here, so
I've seen guys down there hunting and posting some stuff here and there. But
have you been out, Seth, down in Kentucky?
Yeah, right.
I knew the answer to that.
Yeah. With business as brisk as it is, if people saw me out hunting, there'd be mutiny and canceled orders everywhere. So no, we're in the throes of just making sure everybody's got their stuff before season.
Good deal. Connor, what about you? You ventured down to the mothership there in Kentucky to
I still haven't got the invite to come hunt Kentucky with Seth and Tyler, but I'm getting ready here in West Virginia. We start on Saturday, just like Ohio, and I'm gonna go out and smoke a doe on the first day, hopefully.
There you go, man. High lofty goals for day one. So
that's the plan, at least.
I hope I see a deer on day one. That's always my goal. So you got to see it first before you can kill it, right?
That's true.
Well, guys, to our listeners out there, if you remember back, I think it's episode 194, we had Seth and Tyler from Sirius that we talked all kinds about arrows, the building process, everything that goes along with that. So, if you want to know anything more about the archery and the arrow side of things, we're not going to cover that tonight as much, but more on what's going on in their world. They've had some pretty cool hunts. But you can check back to episode 194 for the archery stuff or the arrow building stuff. So, guys, you kind of just got back recently from a little trip, and I want to hear all about it. And I've watched some of the episodes on your Sirius TV stuff, but tell us about where you've been.
Seth, why don't you go? Since you killed so much more, I'll let you go first. Talk about all your hunts first.
Well, yeah, we went to South Africa, which if anybody hasn't been there, I'm sure there's a lot of you listeners that may not have ventured there yet. But if you haven't been there, oh my gosh, it's a bow hunter's paradise. It has everything a bow hunter can want. You can spot and stalk. You can blind hunt. It's pretty magical as far as just different numbers of species. You can go after dangerous game. You can go after plains game. It's great. We were there in late July. This year was a little bit tougher than previous years, only from the standpoint that they typically don't have a cloud in the sky. At least in the Tabazimbi area where we were, they don't have a cloud in the sky from the first part of April until the middle end of September. And then it'll start to rain and then it clears out and they don't even have clouds for most of the time. It rained on us three times while we were there. Everything was as green as Kentucky grass. And so it was a little tougher because, you know, they don't have that need for water. A lot of the smaller animals, they get a lot of their water just from their vegetation. So typically the bow hunters like to go in July, late June, July, and early August because everything's dry. And so they're forced more to water supply, and you can put your blinds up over water. They also are a little more food dependent if it's really dry. This year it wasn't like that. So the hunting was actually a little bit tougher. I wound up staying an additional week past Connor and Wyatt, who Wyatt Atkins went with us this year. And I wound up staying another week just because we were short on footage, just because the hunting was a little harder. But this is we went with the African Allure, which is Ryan Clark is the professional guide there and the owner. Oh man, awesome place. But when we got there, he told us, he said, this is going to be a little bit more difficult just because everything's so green. And he wasn't kidding. But he said in 46 years of being there, he said the greenest it's in the wettest they've ever been. So it's just kind of an anomaly, because last year it was so dry everywhere you stepped, it sounded like you were stepping on Rice Krispies. And, but it was a good trip. It's a good trip. It's a trip that I hope a lot of bow hunters will be able to make in their life, because they really think it's unaffordable, or it's scary, or man, it just couldn't be any further from the truth. A pack and elk hunt in, with an outfitter in, Arizona or New Mexico is going to cost you a lot more than being able to go over for a week and hunt five or six animals in Africa. So it was a good time.
Connor, was it your first trip to Africa?
So this was my second trip. Me and Seth went last year as well. Killed a lot more stuff the year before, but I just kind of went over there this year with one animal in mind that I really wanted to get. And after 3 days, I made it happen.
What was that animal? I know. I watched Sirius TV.
That was
exactly what you're talking about.
That was a beautiful kudu. So
yes, it was.
I had talked to Ryan before we went. I was like, man, I don't want to leave there without a kudu. That's the one animal I want to go after. So he said, okay, we can make it happen. I hunted the first evening we got there. I didn't see anything. The second day, I did an all-day sit. At about 9:30 in the morning, the whole herd of kudu came in. I didn't see the bull, but there was a sable in there as well, and he kind of pushed them all off. So that's probably why I didn't see it. Later that day, they all came in. I probably had an opportunity at the target bull I was after, but it was one of those things. He was on his way in, and I just wanted him to get in and get settled before I tried to make a shot. And he got settled, but he went to the other side to where I couldn't get a shot, and you know, all that stuff. But the next day I went in, I was going to try and do another all day sit. And by about 9 o'clock, I center punched his heart, and he taped out at, Seth, was it 49 and a half? Is that what it was?
49 and a half. Yeah, it was big.
He was 49 and a half on both horns too. So I mean, he was perfectly symmetrical, just a beautiful bull.
Yeah, that was a big animal for sure.
For our, and when I say our, I mean me, ignorant pea brain Ohio buck hunters. What is a kudu? Can you kind of explain that, or how do you spell it so we can Google it?
Yeah, kudu. It's KUDU. It's one of the spiral horn antelope. I would kind of, Seth, would you compare it to elk body size wise? That's kind of what
not yours.
Well, mine was bigger. Yours is about, than elk.
Good night. Yeah, the body on that one is the biggest that Ryan has ever seen.
Wow.
And, yeah,
I it mean, weighed so, out at around 900 pounds, I believe.
Yeah.
Wow. Which is huge.
And the kudu, it has the spiral horn, so you're measuring from tip to base.
So base to tip, you go around in the spiral, and that's the 49 and a half is the measurement of one horn. So you measure that. Yeah.
That's wild. What other kind of animals are you chasing over there?
Oh, man, they have everything. I mean, Seth, I'm trying to count how many different species we've killed in the past 2 years. There's so many.
There's so many.
In the two years that I've been there, I've killed a blue wildebeest, impala, nyala, warthog, kudu, springbuck. I think that's all I've killed. Seth, you've killed several more.
Well,
I mean, there's just every time you go, you're going to see something different. Every time you sit in a blind, you're going to see something.
And the neat thing is, like, some of the animals are almost like color phase bears. So, for example, in the on the wildebeest, you have blue wildebeest. The black wildebeest is a CITES animal. It's not something most guys would go there to hunt. That's not something that would be typically hunted over there. But you've got – then you'd have the golden wildebeest, which is a really, really cool golden color. And then you have the king's wildebeest, which is another color variant of that. So it's a lot like killing a blonde bear or a cinnamon bear, chocolate bear, or black bear. They're all black bears. You have the same thing when you get into your
impala.
Yeah, you have the common red. You have a black impala. You have a saddleback impala. White flank was the other one. Yeah. So there's just a lot of other cool color variations of them as well. And, you know, the one thing that I was really hoping to get this year was a Gemsbuck. Four trips to Africa. I've wanted that from the beginning, and still it still hasn't happened. So I guess there's always trip number five, I suppose.
Just keeps you coming back. So when you're in those giant blinds, and what are they, like pit blinds? Are they just mounds? Are you hunting over food sources, water sources? What's bringing them in there all the time?
It's mostly water. In the blinds vary this year. At the African Allure on their concession, because they've got a lot of different concessions you can hunt. It depends on really what you're after. Just because, like here in America, we don't have mule deer everywhere. We don't have, you know, whitetail all the way out on the West Coast. So depending on what you're going for, you may have to move concessions. And a concession over there, you know, I'd say a typical concession, you know, we're talking 15,000 to 20,000 acres. Wow. And it would be managed much similar to how they do it in Texas. They manage their herds. If they have a particularly big, let's say, sable, that may become a breeder sable, he may be off limits. Or if you really want him, you're going to get your pocketbook out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but no, typically over water, the blinds that, on the African Allures concession, there are, they have a couple different kinds, but the main ones they have are, you're about waist deep, wouldn't you say, Connor?
Yeah.
When you walk in, you go down in, and you're about waist deep because you're shooting, just above ground level. When you take your shot, sometimes you're actually shooting up at the animal just slightly.
My kudu was at an upward angle just because it's such a tall animal.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's some big concrete blinds there too, where they're sunken, but you're a little bit elevated. They're all crazy comfortable. So it's easy for a, you know, if you've got a camera guy there, one can sit, the other one can shoot. It's pretty easy.
Yeah.
Real quick, what's a sable?
Oh, months. Google that. Just kidding.
It's another antelope. Yeah. It's not a spiral horn.
Okay.
Yeah.
A sable is pretty much all black. Kind of looks like a horse with really long, sweeping horns that go straight back.
They're pretty gnarly.
Yeah. Really pretty. They're a majestic looking animal.
Okay.
They are. A good one, a good sable is 46, 47 inches. An exceptional one that you're going to, you know, you pay through the nose for would be 52, 53. But they are a really cool animal.
Okay. Now I feel like an expert in Africa. So
there you go.
The five animals. So, like, I'm always intrigued to watch, you know, videos about like the African hunts, and so do you just hop in trucks and or jeeps and you're driving these 20,000 acre concessions and you're just spotting game, or are you just
I mean, is that like the spot in stock and you're just moving in on them? I saw that where like some guy was like just like 50 mile an hour blowing animals out and then they start stalking them. Did you guys do any of that, like the spot stock, or are you just in blinds most of the time?
Go ahead, Connor.
So we do a little bit of everything. It kind of just depends on what you're after. Like if they've got the animal coming into a blind, obviously you're going to do that. But I had another hunt where I was hunting for a springbuck, and I hunted that thing out of a saddle in one of the most uncomfortable trees I've ever been in my life for 2 or 3 days. And I just couldn't make it happen. So it was the last day before we had to head to the airport. We had to leave at like noon. So we got up that morning. I got 308 out and I stood in the back of the truck and we drove around and I busted him from the back of the truck.
Attaboy. So,
yeah. I mean, you got to do what you got to do sometimes.
There you go.
But yeah, there are times that like you'll be out driving around and you see an animal off in the distance and you just kind of just keep on driving like you're not paying attention to it. And then you get out and you hike back to it downwind, try and make a stalk.
That's pretty cool. I want to do that. I'm going to go to Africa. I want to roll through with a 308 from the back of a Jeep shooting.
It makes it interesting.
So, I mean, there are places where you can gun hunt just like that. And they call that hunting safari style. You're going to have a nice high racked, Land Cruiser or, Toyota mostly. And they've got nice comfortable chairs back there and you're sitting and it's beautiful outside. You know, the weather over there, during that time, it's their winter. So most of our days were in, you know, 72, 73 degrees during the day and high to mid 40s at night. So really, really nice weather. And, you can roll around and you can blast stuff until your wallet falls apart.
That's that hunting style is very similar to rifle season in West Virginia.
I can imagine.
Same concept.
And you were from West Virginia, so you can level those accusations.
Oh yeah.
So when you're shooting an animal that's 900 pounds and or whatever, what kind of arrow setups are we looking at with those? Because I just, you know, got to figure those things out.
Yep. So on that hunt, I was using our Sirius Orion with the 150 single bevel with bleeders. The total arrow weight was right around 600 grains. And I put it right on his shoulder and I buried it up to the fletchings. He didn't go 50 yards.
Didn't go 20. You hit him with the Rutt Daniels.
That's right.
There you go. It's bear hunting. You guys did some of that earlier in the year too. What was that? Was it New Brunswick? Where did you guys do that?
So it was in New Brunswick. We went to Long Lake Adventures, man. That place is beyond gorgeous. Tyler took a nice bear while we were there. We had a couple other people that wanted to go with us, and they all shot bears. The only guy that didn't shoot a bear was me.
Oh.
But I ran camera for Tyler on that one, and, man, was pretty stoked for him. He got a nice bear and just again, really nice. We had really nice weather while we were there. It was cold. So we left Kentucky and it was kind of, when did we go up there? I guess it was late May, early June.
Cause I couldn't go because my brother was graduating high school. So yeah, it was probably late May.
And I remember we left, Kentucky, the Cincinnati airport's in Kentucky, about 10 minutes from our facility. And it was 94 degrees. And we got up there and it was, we got into Maine. And when we got there, it was 37 and raining. And we went out fishing the very first day and we had sleet and snow. So it was good. But
talk about shock to the system.
Yeah, we all got up there. Fortunately, nobody had looked at the weather forecast except for me, apparently. I said, guys, do you guys bring in lots of warm clothes? Why?
Well, it's going to snow. Yeah, exactly.
It's going to cost you.
Yeah.
But no, that was good. But we did do a Cape Buffalo cow hunt. We got invited to do two management hunts while we were there. And I don't think Connor's got the film ready for the giraffe yet.
Not yet.
But, and we've debated on that, right? Because anytime something's in a nursery rhyme, it starts becoming off limits. And the problem is that because the West tells the other governments in Africa what to do with their animals and how to do them through that, through the CITES program, we have a lot of people that are very averse to honey drip. And so we debated whether to do it or not. And, but it's important because what they don't understand is there are so many giraffe in Africa. There are a few subspecies that, from what I understand, are not even hunted, that are endangered, but the common giraffe is overpopulated. So the concession that we were on, you could see they had eaten all the way down. The browse line on the trees was really interesting because the trees were eaten from their head height all the way down to where they can no longer eat. They can bend over and drink, but they can't bend over and eat. And the concession would hold a maximum of 8. They preferred 6, 8 giraffe with the amount of vegetation they have. And there were 20 on the concession. In fact, they would have given any other concession owners giraffes if they wanted to transport them. But the problem exists on almost every concession. There's too many giraffes. They just they don't have a natural predator anymore because the only thing that was a predator to a giraffe was a large male lion. And there are no free roaming lions in South Africa anymore. So they asked us to take a female off of the property. And that is a real test for an arrow. So we hunted and we were able to harvest a nice female, exactly what they asked us to take off. And because all these concessions have management plans, so they only have a carrying capacity of X number of each type of animal. And so in their management plan, they were going to have to reduce the size. And it was a good hunt. That arrow setup was an Apollo 150 arrow, and that was tipped with the tough head 400 grain dangerous game head. It had 300 grains of ethics insert behind it, and I think the total arrow weight on that was 1,055 grains.
Wow.
And I was shooting that out of a 85 pound PSE Levitate bow that came out of their custom shop. So, and went right in. Always listen to your guide. There's a great book you can buy before you go over called The Perfect Shot, and it's perfect for rifle hunters, but it does have a few adaptations for bow hunters. And one of them is on the giraffe. And, you know, Ryan is a professional guide and a professional hunter. And he said, you need to go another 2 hands back from that spot and you'll punch it right through the heart. Mm. And we punched it right through the heart and it didn't go more than 120 or 130 yards.
That's impressive. So you made a comment. I want to just follow up on that. You said something about the U.S. government's involvement with, is it the management plans in Africa? Is it pressure on hunters or organizations?
There's a lot of pressure from a lot of organizations, but the CITES, for example, giraffes are a CITES animal. So that means you have to pull a permit. You have to, there's a lot of stuff you have to do in order to be able to export the animal and import the animal. Not that you can't do it, but there are certain animals that it doesn't make any sense. They have an overabundance of them. So that puts in the mindset to the hunter over here that they must be endangered, you know, and then they become taboo to hunt. So there's just certain things that in certain countries, there's certain animals in that CITES, even here in the U.S. Take the polar bear. Polar bear is one that you can't import. You can go hunt it, but you can't bring it back into the United States. Some of those more draconian laws are what prevent people from hunting because they think that something's in danger.
That's interesting. It's almost more of like a hang up on the hunter side. You know, I've never thought of it like that. I always thought it was, you know, some crazy regulation that, you know, that and God forbid you shoot a lion or a giraffe and you put it online, you're going to get hammered in this country, right? I mean, I was listening to a podcast the other day. It was just a non-hunting. It was a business podcast. And this guy was talking about Cecil the Lion. Everyone remembers that. And he was just talking about how outrageous it was and how, I'm like, shut up, man. I mean, it just, and I think for me, I've just really started to look into the benefits of hunting in Africa and what, you know, hunting is conservation. I mean, at a level I don't think we really understand in this country unless you go over there and experience it. So,
Seth, it's funny you brought up the polar bears. Not funny, but I'll never forget one of the first times I was in my firearm store or whatever, and I just remember the guy behind the counter, well, it's not illegal to shoot the polar bears. You just can't bring them back into the United States. And I'm sitting there thinking like, oh, Dorothy, you're not in Kansas anymore. Like, what are we talking about here? But now that, you know, to hear that come from you, it's obviously it's a factual statement. And at that point, I was a little bit like, what's going on here? So,
well, I do know that and Ryan can tell you the story best, but they have their own animal rights groups in South Africa as well. And they were doing a story of, they were culling giraffe from a property and actually selling the hunts off. And they were being protested by an animal rights group. And the owner of the concession said, if you will pay to move them wherever you want, you can have them and we won't hunt them. You know how much money was raised? Zero.
I say $0. Yeah.
Zero. You know, that's the reality of it is hunters put more conservation money into the African continent than any animal rights group ever will.
Yeah. Well, and those guys that run the concession, I mean, they want a certain level of them and they want them to be healthy and everything. It's not like they're just trying to get rid of them, right? Because they need guys like us to go over and want to come back and hunt, right?
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And if it pays, it stays. You know, that's, I know that you don't quote me on the exact figure, but it's around 80-85% of, Kenyan animals, or I believe it's Kenya, they outlawed hunting in the 70s. And
wow.
When there's competition for cattle, which they could sell, when you can't sell hunts, they're not going to keep the land barren. It's going to make money somehow. So those animals cease to exist. So if all of a sudden nobody wants to ever hunt a giraffe again, that's fine. The giraffe, as they die off or they're killed off by humans, they're gonna be replaced by something that makes money. So if it pays, it stays.
Did you experience any like hunter harassment down there? I was interesting. You said that there were people protesting. I mean, was that prevalent? I mean, if we hear about it in this country all the time. If we started shooting nursery animals over here, man, people would be lining up in the streets and the WMAs, I think. So,
I think everyone's happy to see the hunters over there because it's such a boost for their economy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I talked to a landowner just recently in Africa, in South Africa, and he employs 40 people permanent, like full-time people down there. So, I mean, I think the more people hear about it and they learn and they're willing to listen you know, about the things that happened over there. I think people were, you know, I think they understand, you know, it's an emotional topic for way too many people. So put that giraffe video up, Connor. We got your back.
It's going up soon. It'll be
there. You go.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, well, what do you guys got planned this fall over here in the States? Anything fun? Connor, we talked a little bit. You guys start this weekend down your way?
Yeah, so we start on Saturday, just like Ohio. As far as planned hunts, Seth, I don't think we have anything planned for the fall, do we?
No, nothing planned right now. We've got a lot of deer hunting going on. I'm going to go hunt with Paul, I think.
So we're just going to hunt kind of around home. I mean, I know all year long you all seen we've been all over the country hunting random animals, but I think we're going to try and stay around home for the fall and hunt a bunch of stuff. But I do have another hunt planned. I'm hunting all week in West Virginia for whitetail. And then October 1st, I leave for Maryland. And I'm going to be on I think it's 8 or 9 days, I'll be doing public land seek a deer.
Oh man, cool. I was saying, like, oh, I hope he says seek a deer.
Yep.
I saw those on Tether did an episode with those guys down there on the seek a deer, and I have been I want to put my hands on one of those. Those things look freaking cool, man.
So I really don't know what I'm getting into. Really, it was a bunch of guys that I just kind of know through Facebook. They said, "Hey, we go every year. You want to tag along with us?" I said,
"Yes, of course, absolutely." Yeah. I downloaded the Maryland and Virginia like on X Maps the moment I saw that. I'm like, okay, here we go. Here's some public land, marshy. And if you haven't seen a seek a deer, it's like a miniature elk, I guess.
Exactly what it is.
And it bugles, and I use that term bugle loosely. I don't know how else to explain it. But
so there's this place that we go to eat after we get done hunting, and it's like what's it called, Paul?
It's an Amish all you can eat, and then they're like right next
like
door
a petting
to it
zoo, is, and they've got yeah, him. Paul they've gets got those, so excited, like he's going to go over and pet him every time we're in there sitting there. You can see him out the window, and he just sits there staring at him, wanting to go pet the
I'm always like hatching a plan about how to break in there and steal their sheds in the spring or like the winter, but I can't figure it out. So, but they're awesome. They're all these little seek a deer running around. We were there during the rut 1 year, and they were bashing into each other. And
yep.
Oh, it was awesome, man. I love those little critters. So that'll be cool, man. So are you like coastal Maryland?
Yes, it'll be coastal. Okay. I'm sleeping in a tent for 9 days. Haven't figured out the whole shower thing yet.
You don't need that.
Kind of wing that one. But yeah, staying at a campground. Just
so you're gonna ground hunt those? You're gonna climb a tree? What's your plan? Saddle. Oh, there you go. Saddle, okay. Yeah.
That's the plan for now. I think I'm gonna pack a blind with me, and then just in case I need it, I'll pack way too much stuff, of course.
You know, it was funny, man. I think the first time I saw seek a deer was on that meat eater episode. And then I was reading an article about them that they are invasive. You know, someone brought them over from Japan in the 40s, maybe.
Right.
And then the natural resources departments in Maryland and Virginia tried to exterminate these deer because, you know, they're an invasive species. And then someone realized that they're not competing with the whitetails or really any other native species. So they're just like, okay. And to your point, Seth, if it makes money, it stays. And that's kind of where I feel like where those little guys have fallen. So good for them. Damn cool.
I'm so glad they didn't wipe them out.
Man, every once in a while, I'm like, all right, how do we trap a seek a deer and an elk and start bringing stuff back to Ohio, right? How do we?
Oh, Paul.
I'm kidding. If anyone from the DNR is listening to that, I'm kidding. I'm not gonna do
Paul.
That.
So, Connor, you're down in West Virginia. What kind of seasons do you guys have? So you're going to start the same day we do with archery. Do you guys, obviously I'm sure you can use rifles down there. We don't really have that luxury, but.
Yep. So archery starts, September 24th, and then it will go to December 31st. That's your archery season. I'm not a big rifle hunter because I grew up in Logan County, which was one of the only counties. So as a kid, I never had the opportunity to rifle hunt. So it's not something I really keep up with. It's like, you get 2 weeks for rifle around Thanksgiving is what it is. And then you've got like a doe rifle, and then you got muzzleloader. So late November through first week or so of December is when all the gun stuff happens. So you've got a really long archery season. Then you got a good solid few weeks after rifle to get back out there with the bow.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost identical to the Ohio seasons.
What's the, what are the bag limits like down there?
Well, that's a hot topic here in West Virginia right now.
Press that button, man.
Yep. There's a lot of people trying to get the limit lowered. In total, you can kill 3 bucks here right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many and how many doe?
That depends on
a 100. Are there antler restrictions?
No antler restrictions. Okay. Well, there's a Cooper's Rock State Forest is right near my house, and there are antler restrictions there. It's 14 inches wide. So basically outside the ears.
Come here, deer. Let me measure.
Yeah. I hate but they say there's big bucks there. I've never messed with it because it's some rough country, but.
So is it like one deer during archery, one deer during rifle, one deer during muzzle, or is it like just season wide? You get three.
So don't quote me on this because you need a lawyer to understand our regulations, the way they're all set up. It's the most confusing thing in the world. Seems like every year I'm calling Gabe one saying, hey, is this correct? Is this what I need to do here? But you can buy extra archery tags. So you can take like your rifle tag or whatever and put it towards a deer in archery.
And a lot of it's county based. You don't have WMUs or.
No. So there's some counties like that don't have a doe season, for instance. And then you've got the four bow only counties where it's one buck for the whole year. There's no gun season. It's archery only and you get one buck. So if it's one buck and one doe in the archery only counties.
Man, Paul, and I was complaining to you the other day that our deer management permits were confusing. That doesn't sound like it holds a candle to any of West Virginia's rules.
No, it doesn't.
It's a lot of reading, and that's not something I want to do. I think it's awful.
That's a challenge for me. I started hunting more out-of-state turkey hunts this year, and it's just like, luckily I didn't break any regulations, but I overlooked something down in one of the southern states I hunted. And luckily, the landowner I was with, he's like, well, did you get this permit? I'm like, what permit? And there was like a $5, national forest permit that I didn't get. And I bought it in the truck as I'm driving up there and got it. But I mean, it's just, I think it's, it's important, especially if you're hunting out of state, man, to really lock on to those regulations.
Yeah. I've been studying the Maryland stuff.
Yeah.
I go out there trying to make sure I'm good to go on all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I learned the hard way one time in Pennsylvania that you need to really know the. We're not going to go there. Seth, how's
it? It was nothing. It was nothing bad. It was nothing bad.
No, it happened.
Ongoing it joke. Does. So, Seth, I know you're busy down there making arrows, but are you going to be able to get out there in Kentucky at all?
I hope so. It has been a long season for us. And to be honest with you, deer has not ever been one of my most favorite animals to hunt. So I enjoy it, but it's just never been one of my most favorite animals to hunt. So if I have to choose.
That's why Connor's shaking his head right now.
That's why you and Paul get along so well.
Oh, man, I'm right there with you. I'm not going to rack off my top five animals, Seth, but. Deer is not on that top five, so
it's great when I have the time to do it, but I do a lot of R&D during that time. So
I like where that's going. I like that. I do a lot of R&D during deer hunting.
Right.
So you're just like, man, I'm gonna see if I can zip this for this deer.
Yeah. And so it's not that I don't love it. And I love that it's a passion of the majority of the people who are our customers. And I share the outdoor passion with them, just not always on white-tailed deer. But it is pretty awesome to get out that time of year because, the weather in our area is fairly temperate. A lot of those days it's getting in the low 50s. And it's crisp in the morning and it's nice and you don't have to wear 27 layers of clothes. We have a long deer season in Kentucky. So I think it's don't quote me on this, but I think it's the first Saturday in September until the 15th of January.
That sounds
good. And one thing that I've always been dismayed with in Kentucky in particular is that they have the rifle season, but they put it right in the middle of the rut. And I love how Ohio does it in that they have their shotgun season. I think it comes in around Thanksgiving-ish, if you guys remember.
It's the Monday after Thanksgiving every year.
Okay, that's what I thought. And that's let a lot of the deer have opportunity to do a lot of breeding. And it's winding down at that point. And so I've always wished that they would put the rifle season just a couple weeks later, because it's almost 3 full weeks long. And that's right in November. So, but yeah, it's a long season. I do like the late season, especially if we get snow. That's always a good time. But I'll get out somewhere. I think I'm going to go hunt with Paul. Isn't that what we're doing, Paul?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we're gonna do some deer hunting. Hopefully, some turkey hunting too. That would be really fun. Oh, stop it, Connor. Don't get disgusted with that. You can also hunt turkeys during the fall. No one knows that.
Connor, you come up and we'll go find deer. Let them go play with
that
the
sounds better, yeah. Okay. Let them go chase turkey.
Oh, man. I will work that into every conversation that I have. Turkey hunting, I'm just throwing that out there. So I got to do a fall turkey hunting podcast last night with Mitchell Shirk from the PA Woodsman. And man, it was like 2 hours long with this fall turkey hunt legend on, Brett Berry from Northern Ohio. It was freaking glorious, man. I was in my element. So
I got a question about that for you.
Yeah.
So I was talking about West Virginia regulations. I was reading it the other day. It's legal to use dogs for turkey hunting here in the fall.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of that?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm doing my first dog turkey hunt this year. So, and our listeners are just like, oh, God, here he goes again. So I will keep it short, I promise. Yep. But, I mean, that's really how turkey hunting started. And, you know, in this country, it was in the fall. It was with dogs. That's the heritage of the turkey hunter, dogs in fall. And it's just kind of spiraled out into, and don't get me wrong, I freaking love spring turkey hunting, but that's where it started. So, that's kind of one of the, you know, when you look at like the heritage of the modern hunter, man, those turkey hunters, that's where it started. So, okay. All right, I'm off my soapbox. No more questions about turkeys, Connor.
Got it.
Thank you.
This will derail real quick.
Well, guys, I guess, you know, we covered a lot here, but the, what do you got happening down there in the Sirius Workshop? New products come out this year, or anything you want to tell us about, talk about?
Yeah, so we just launched the Gemini Arrow a couple weeks ago, and we had a big initial run on those. We're going to be out soon, so that's been a big hit. It's a 204 diameter, so it's a small diameter, but it's not a micro, and it gives you the GPI of a micro, though. It's a carbon. It's a really, really incredible special carbon that we're using, and it's incredibly expensive to purchase, but, you know, the FOC that you're able to get with these arrows is off the chart. So we launched that. We brought out the Toughhead 150 Evolution series. Well, we launched the whole 2.0 series, the 200 grain. This year we brought out a 150 and a 125 and more to come. So that's been some of the launches this year. We have prototyping stuff we're doing now. Those are all stuff for 2023. So there's a lot of exciting stuff going on, and that's some of the stuff that I do. And all of our team are fanatical deer hunters. Connor, Tyler, everybody in the shop, they're all fanatical deer hunters. So somebody has to stay back and make sure that orders get out, because people don't stop ordering in October, November, and December. So, but they all want to go hunting. So there's a lot of half days. There's a lot of weird hours so guys can get out in the field. And there's more to come, though. Stay tuned.
You know, I Seth and Connor, I was at a bow shop just a couple days ago. My son bought a new bow, and of course, you know, the guy in there was just running his mouth about, you know, the Ranch Ferry and high FOC and all this stuff. I'm just listening to him talk, and he's just angry about it, right? And he makes a comment. I had my Sirius Apollo in my hand, 625 grains of beauty. And he made the comment. He's like, well, I don't want all that weight in the center of the arrow. And I just look at him. I was like, say that again. He's like, I don't want all that weight in the center of the arrow. So I hand him my Sirius arrow and he holds it and he holds it in the middle and the whole thing just goes whoop. And he's like, what was that? I'm like, FOC, man. Would like it's a high FOC forward of center. He had no idea what he was talking about. And he's like, this is really nice. I'm like, yeah, it is really nice. You should go buy some. It was just really funny. The look on his face and that thing just fell forward. He's like, well, I thought it was in the center of the arrow. I'm like, no, man, it's in the it's forward of center. Like, and yeah. he didn't know what to say. He just shut up and started putting the, I'm like, all right, I think we might have starting. It's going to be a process with that guy, but it was just so funny, man. Just the look on his face when that arrow tipped forward. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was really funny. I tried not to laugh. I had this big shit eating grin on my face. Like, ooh, I got you, man. I got you in front of everybody. So.
Well, you know, what's funny is that man, such a visceral reaction happens
yeah.
from people when you mention his name and mm-hmm. or Dr. Eshby's name.
Yeah.
You mention those guys and it's just down deep. They're mad
it
down
is.
Deep and
it
they
is.
Can't figure it out. Like, dude, yeah. we have arrows. If you want to shoot the lightest, fastest arrow in the world, we have that for you.
Yeah.
You want to shoot one with the highest FOC, what Ranch Gary calls adult arrows?
Yeah.
We got that for you. And we have really taken off in the dangerous game in that you know, this past week I worked on two separate elephant builds for guys. So we've got everything from a guy who wants to shoot one that's darn near dry firing his bow all the way up through shooting elephant. You know,
it's impressive.
And if you call in, we're one of the few places, I don't know of any others, there may be, but I don't know of any other archery company. And this has been something that we've had to wrestle with a little bit internally this year, because, you know, we've gotten some bad press on online of people saying, oh, they're customer service. You know, I've been waiting on a call back for 3 days. Well, there's two of us. And we try to give everybody 15 minutes to go over their setup. Everybody in their first, if this is their first foray into shooting something above 400 grains, there's just questions.
Yeah.
And we try to give everybody 15 minutes. We were taking in over 100 calls a day for two guys.
Wow.
You know,
that's crushing. So
it is. And the problem is, if you think about how many guys say, ooh, my bow shop, my local one, they stink. I wouldn't let them work on anything. I drive 2 hours to my bow shop and such and such because I won't let these guys touch my bow. Well, if it's hard, too hard for them to figure out how to get a guy that can adequately tie on a D-loop, how hard is it to get another tech that can adequately explain FOC,
yeah.
help them with their tuning? You wouldn't believe how many pictures of paper tuning stuff that we get from guys every day. I don't know what to do next. And they don't have – I wish they would occasionally go to YouTube a few more times and just do a little research on their own. But, you know, we give you 15 minutes and that just – you know, there's only so many of those in a day we can do.
Yeah.
And it did get overwhelming really fast. We had a lot of calls last year, but we didn't have this volume. I mean, the growth has been exponential. So we'll be on the lookout for somebody that can. The other thing is, it's a little bit easier to help a guy tune his bow when you're standing there with the bow and, you know, in your hand, or he's got it in his hand and you can watch what he's doing. Try doing that over the phone.
Yeah, that's tough with a guy that doesn't know what he's doing to begin with. You know, that's an impossible task for anybody. I mean, you can't FaceTime that enough to fix that, you know?
No. And you know, Tyler has, you know, some of the diagnosis work that he does over the phone, there's a guy who'd been to three different bow shops, and they couldn't figure out what the problem was, so he was convinced that the arrow was messed up. When he would go, if he shot his standard diameter arrows, they were great, but as soon as he shot his micro diameter, they were all over the place. So Tyler says, what's that felt look like on your wrist? Is it worn out? Yeah, it's worn out. Change that felt and see what happens. Right? So he's doing this remote, trying, you know, after the guy, a lot of guys go on for more than 15 minutes. I don't know if you've ever talked to an old hunter before. God bless them. They can talk for hours because they don't have anything else to do.
Yeah.
And especially in the off season. And, you know, but to find a guy or girl with that level of competency that can do this kind of stuff over the phone is hard.
And patience.
Hard.
Yeah.
Patience. Yeah. Lots of patience.
And so we're going to be on the hunt for that person for 2023, because we want to still be that. We started out as a boutique company, right? And we don't want to lose that boutique feel. But if you're having an issue that you can't get a hold of somebody, but this year was a real strain.
Yeah.
And that customer service is key to us. And when we fall down on that, you know, there's some limited options. That one of the options is that you just clamp down and you say, we're only going to take so many customers. You know, I don't think that serves the hunting community well. The other one is to try desperately to find the right people that can help. So that's what we're going to be focusing on for next year. We do have some new product in the pipeline. But number one is getting our customer service and our technical support shored up to where everybody can get their 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I know every time that I've dealt with any of you guys, you've been very, very helpful. Yeah.
Top notch. So.
Yeah, there's some hand-holding for me earlier in the year. Tyler did great. So,
and, yeah, you know, Tyler's awesome.
He is. It was one of my good friends and listens to the show. He listened to our Ashby talk and was like, all right, I'm sold. You know, man, he did the research. He watched every Ranch Fairy video out there. And Troy, he goes through the process and the tuning and everything. And, you know, I think, like you said, watch a few more YouTube videos before you – suck up 45 minutes of someone's time. So,
and speaking of YouTube,
you know, it's funny,
PSA, public service announcement.
One thing about the little bit heavier or higher FOC, one of the things that and it's just really interesting is you kind of see this progression. A guy gets into it a little bit his first year, and he was only shooting 425. So he dips his toe in the water, and it's 500. Well, he has good success that year. Next year, it's 780. You know, it's like this gigantic, well, if a little's good, a lot's got to be better. So then he's shooting this really heavy arrow. That's the only time we see guys ever go dial back in weight, is when they dial back because they went crazy 750, and now they want to shoot 600 again. But I have yet to have anybody call and tell me, you know what? I tried the 500 or 550 thing for deer. I'm going back to 425.
Yeah.
Never. It hasn't happened. I'm sure it has happened, and maybe they just wouldn't call me. But it's just interesting that I don't know anybody that just said it just wasn't for me.
Well, and I think we talked about it in one of our last shows, Paul. But when Giannis shot his bull and. Out there, it was in Colorado or whatever. The Plan B idea, right? And that was one of your arrows and your broadheads.
Yeah,
and it helped him to eventually take that bull down completely, because it didn't work out, you know, like it does on some of these hunting shows. But
yeah, with that archery tech, just over, you know, a couple of days ago, he kept referencing Tim Gillingham, the shot play and all that stuff, and I said, you know what, You know what the difference between me and Tim Gillingham is? He's like, what? I'm like, well, Tim Gillingham's a world-class archer. I'm some schmuck that hunts 30 times a year. That's the difference between, and that Giannis plan B, I think that was the big thing for me, because I've been on the end of that where you shoot a monster and you have equipment failures and it is heartbreaking. And I was just like, you know what? Done. I'm done with this. And I quit bow hunting for 6 years and didn't touch a bow. And didn't bow archer deer hunt once. It was just because of frustration. And luckily Andrew Muntz was like, well, you should just switch to something heavier. I'm like, wait, what?
That's a thing.
That's a thing. So yeah. Well, good for you guys.
It's like having your plan A and your plan B arrow in the same arrow.
Yes, you know? Absolutely.
And I was amazed at that penetration that Giannis had on that bull. That was unbelievable.
That was incredible.
That broadhead that he was shooting, you know, I know how he sharpens his broadheads, and that thing was, I mean, you know, it was a surgeon's scalpel when he was done. So
yeah,
it's impressive.
Very cool. Good well, deal. We were talking about YouTube videos. Connor, tell us about your endeavors.
Okay, yeah. So I do all the filming, all the producing for Sirius TV. If you haven't watched that, go check it out. We are on YouTube, and we haven't really announced this yet. I don't know when this is going to air, but within the next week or two, we are also going to be on Carbon TV.
Nice. Good deal.
Yep. So all of our previous episodes will now be available on Carbon TV.
Okay.
All the stuff moving forward will also be on there. And we recently just launched a podcast, Sirius Talk. We are on Apple, Spotify. What else are we on? Amazon Music, all the major platforms. And that will be on Carbon as well, because they have podcasts. So we just started it, just released it on Monday. We had 5 episodes out. We got a few more in the pipeline. And we're going to try and do probably a weekly episode as of now and see how it goes.
Good deal. That's exciting. Yeah. Congratulations on that. So hopefully there are more iguana hunts in the pipeline. That was really neat.
That was fun. That was a lot of fun. Unfortunately, though, the guy that we went with, he moved away. He's not doing it anymore. So,
really?
Yeah.
That looked like just little kids out there. Just blah, blah, blah. I mean, it looked like a freaking blast.
Especially when the cop showed up.
When the cop showed up. Yeah. Yeah, Karen didn't like us. But...
next to Africa, that has been one of the, if not the most fun hunt that we did this year.
Yeah,
by far.
I bet, man. It looked like a blast.
Yeah. So, it didn't hurt that we were in Miami and it was mid 70s, and at home it was, you know, 22.
That helped a lot.
Right. That helped a lot.
Yeah, we got a sunburn in January.
Oh, sign me up, man. Good. Sign me up. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time and for the work that you guys do within this industry. The products you put out, man. I know that Andrew and I are very happy with the systems that we've bought this year, and I'm looking forward to seeing what's coming up next. So, congratulations on Sirius TV, Carbon TV, the podcast. Sky's the limit, gentlemen.
What's the website, real quick?
SiriusArchery.com. That's SIRIUS Archery.com.
There you go.
It's like the satellite.
Yep. When Seth gets bored, you know, it's give him an order and he can make you some arrows. So.
Call him and talk to him for an hour about trying to get the weight into the middle of the arrow.
Right.
Oh, shoot. Hey, guys.
Gentlemen, thank you.
Take care.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.